Mr. and Mrs. Horace Biggs' voices will be heard on this tape along with mine. Dan Tyler, on February 17th, 1969, I spoke with Mrs. Bill Palmer, who with her husband runs the Crown Point Trading Post. We discussed many subjects, the major theme of which was the changes which she saw in the Indians in the reservation over the 12 years which she has been running the Crown Point Trading Post. The tape opens with her feelings about these changes. We discussed particularly the present interest in cattle which the Navajo have assumed. In many cases, Mrs. Palmer believes that sheep have been done away with in favor of cattle. We also talked about the pawning, which is the main occupation of the Palmer Mercantile Trading Post at Crown Point. She and her husband no longer taking in livestock, and there are very few blankets which they take in. They run their operation basically on a cash basis, and for this reason provide a service of providing cash for the pawned items. She runs this kind of business both at Crown Point and Fort Defiance. We also talked about the relationship of the trader on the reservation and the Navajo Council, Mrs. Palmer believing that the present chairman, Raymond Nakai, has been responsible for a feeling of insecurity among traders. We dwelt quite extensively on the subject of peyote, which has become very much of a problem in the Crown Point area, as it has at Ganado and other places on the reservation. We also looked into the attitude of the Navajo towards the Protestant churches at Crown Point, Mrs. Palmer mentioning that seven of them existed in that small town. We talked briefly about government projects, most of which she disapproved of, and the Navajo youth. The main, most successful information that I received was the name of two informants, Vern Freeland, F-R-E-E-L-A-N-D, and a Mrs. Davis, both of whom Mrs. Palmer felt would be glad to talk to us.
Changes must still be coming very slowly, if they come at all.
No, I don't think they're changing fast.
Do you?
Yeah,
well, see, that would be your perspective. Well, in what way do you notice that there are changes?
Well, for one thing, they have learned to hold their own meetings. They've learned parliamentary procedure. They knew a little of this before you mentioned 2 years. For quite a while, they've known a little bit about parliamentary procedure, but now they're learning more and more and more. And their meetings are amazing. They're conducted just as well as any meetings that you go to else or anything else.
Mm-hmm.
They really are well conducted with illiterate people. Why, it's amazing how well they do. And 30 years ago, why, they just couldn't have done it.
How
so 2 years does seem a short time.
How did they conduct these chapters 30 years ago?
Well, they weren't even formed 30 years. Yes, they were a little over 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, how long have you been at Crown Point?
We lived here at 56.
So you've been there 22 years, no, 12 years.
Yes, but you were out
at White Rock,
yeah.
And Vista, and White
yeah.
Horse, and I've lived on the reservation all my life.
Yeah. The thing that Robbie and I were talking about, that I told her, is that we have practically nothing as far as interviews or information on the Crown Point area. We really don't know anything about it. And I was particularly interested in what history of the of that particular area as far back. Wasn't your dad responsible for getting that trading post going out there at Crown
dad
Point?
Dad had two trading posts out that way, but they were already in existence when he went there, but he did work real hard to get the place built up, get his people benefited by more sheep and bringing more sheep into the country and helping them to be independent. And of course, he lived before the days, he died before the days of O and the O, and some of these things. I don't know how he'd have got, oh, I just don't know how he'd taken that.
Wait a minute.
It just would be a shock to see these. Now, just like DNA, this is the lawyers that they have hired, you know, them. Well, we have three real nice boys as assistants to the lawyer there. His name is Khan. Three real nice boys, drawing real good salaries, and they have to go out and solicit business to be able to justify having them over there. They actually go out and solicit. And the funniest thing has happened to us. Might as well think it's funny, because because we're ever going to get out of it, just to laugh. But Bill caught a shoplifter the other day, and so called the police. And he said, yes, they'd come down and pick her up. So they came down and picked her up, and Bill had to go up there and sign the complaint. And she went to DNA with it. And so they set a day for the hearing, and Bill went down, and he came back, and he just broken up. He was just laughing so hard. He just thought it was a riot. But here came all three of these boys. Mr. Khan didn't come, but all three of these boys with their briefcases, you know, and they all had great stacks of stuff in there like this. This is all over this shoplifting. And so the first thing they did was demand that Bill drop charges. And Bill said, well, I'm not about to drop charges. If I hadn't wanted to refer charges, why, I would have gone down there in the first place. I see no reason for it. And I said, well, if you don't, we're going to charge you with assault and battery. And then Bill just thought that's funny, you know, he hollered because he hadn't touched her.
Oh.
And then they decided that she couldn't be tried in that court, that they had to take it to a federal court in Gallup, which is under Mr. Schilke. Mr. Schilke informed me that he couldn't bring the case to him, but if DNA will go ahead and file charges against him for assault and battery, then he can turn around and countersue. But, and we can't take it into the district court, and we can't find any place to take it.
Typical.
You know, that's interesting, because when I was out talking to Pete McDonald, who I guess is the chief of the ONEO.
Yeah.
You ever met him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
he's,
I've been in Los Angeles, Pete.
He's got a pretty hard shell, it seems to me. He expresses real interest in the oral history business, but I'm not so sure. Anyway, he, not Pete, but some of his friends were telling me that the reason why they're not getting any more money to continue their own oral history work is because the DNA and the ONEO are having a real fight. And I didn't want to ask any questions because I thought that was none of my business.
They really
but
aren't having a bit
was
of
this life. What you saw? Do you think they're not getting enough business? They're sort of a phony organization?
They are a phony organization.
Huh.
They really are. And I was trying to think of the story that Morris told. But anyway, over around in Tinian and Pueblo Cantado, or Pueblo Alto, in that area, they've had three cases where they went into Cuba. One was shoplifting, and one was trader had sold the plum too soon, and I can't remember what the other was. And each time the DNA absolutely lost their own case for themselves.
Are they trained lawyers, or are they just tapped to do the job?
There's none of them that are. Ted Mitchell, I think, is the only one that's licensed.
Hmm.
Well,
the rest of them haven't even taken their exams.
Aren't the Navajo going to be pretty fast to pick this up, that this is a way to get out of
things? Sure they are.
They're going to play both ends against the middle, aren't they? Kind of laughing at our white men's culture for being this stupid. They're just standing back laughing.
They're
letting
us fight each other, and I think that they're brilliant for doing it.
Yeah, I do.
And while they reap the harvest.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like these three boys that are working for DNA there in Crown Point, there's no more need of having them there than there is. Well, they maybe one, if he was really interested, could take care of everything there is. But they have three, and the chapter secretaries. Well, this is a fabulous amount of money that's being spent foolishly.
Mm-hmm.
Just they don't need this.
Mm-hmm.
They've got their legal aid in Window Rock, and I can see a person from legal aid being stationed at Crown Point. But I can't see this DNA organization at all. I just can't see it. And Mitchell, Ted Mitchell, of course, is fighting Mott, who is the attorney for the tribe. And what it is a grudge fight between Mitchell and Mott.
Mm-hmm.
And people suffer.
Well, Cub was telling us about how they have tied their hands, the car dealers in Gallup and so forth, being able to go out and collect on anything. Now the Navajo's going to pick, they already have this picked up.
Well, they had that picked up pretty well in the first place, except that it was still just a little bit doubtful just what they could do. But they know now that they can't come, the car dealer can't come out there.
Mm-mm.
So what car dealer's going to sell except cash? So they're hurting the people.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to keep fooling around getting into this pond, and they're going to hurt them even more. Because this is the only source of cash that the Navajo has. And they get fooling around in that, and they're going to really hurt people.
Well, now you deal mostly with pond at Fort Defiance, don't you?
Uh-huh.
That's what your whole business is at Fort
mm-hmm.
Defiance, is pond.
Where are you in Fort Defiance?
Dunn Mercantile.
Huh.
We have the dry goods, but the big end of it's the pond.
What kinds of things are they bringing to you?
Oh, they bring their kids if you take them. I used to just tell them anything they won't eat while I'm pond. But their beads and their belts and their bracelets and their bow ties and.
Well, now what is this run exactly like a regular pawn shop? You give them a ticket for their merchandise.
Mm-hmm.
And then what kind of terms are there?
6 months. We hang it 6 months in the vault, and then 1 month out on display, because time means nothing to the people. So you hang it out here where they can see it and be reminded that it's about time that they better be picking it up. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they pay 25% on that, 25%, then you hold it 60 days longer. Then if they pay 25% more on it, 25% of what's left, you hold it 60 days longer. Well, this can go on and on and on, and there's no reason for them to ever lose a piece of pawn.
Well, are they changing with this pawn from what they used to? They used to never let a piece of pond go dead. Rarely a piece
mm-hmm.
of pond would go dead. Are they letting their pond go dead now occasionally?
Well, we've gone through a phase. There for a while, they just weren't valuing their pond at all. It seemed like the really good things were getting away from them. But now, the last couple of years, I've noticed that they're placing more value on their pond again than they did for a long time. I think they realized that they were letting themselves out of the source of income, or the source of ready cash. And so they're valuing their stuff more. I imagine that only about 5% of what we pawn goes dead.
Well, then you're using the same method of pawning that you always did,
yes.
40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
This is the way we used to do it.
Yeah.
You keep and then you hang it out for them
yeah.
to see.
That's right.
It's the same method that you use.
The same method we always use.
Are the other traders using the same method, or are they using something else?
Some of them use 30 days, some of them use 60 days, some of them keep it there forever and never say anything to them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just various
mm-hmm.
ways of doing it. But we've always gone by the book, and this is what the book says. You keep it 6 months plus 1 month on display. And really, there's no reason for them to ever lose a piece of pawn.
Do they bargain with you over the value of